I heartily endorse this event or product.
Ahoy, hoy, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Talk to the Audience, where this is always death. I'm one of your hosts, certified Moon and Knight fan, Bob Mackey, who's here with me today.
Moe's bar attendee, Henry Gilbert.
Excellent. And yes, we're here. We're talking about what happened in Simpsons news. And with us this month, if you're a new patron, this is what we do every month. It's called Talk to the Audience. And we basically do what I just told you. And also we read and respond to your questions and comments left on the Patreon for What a Cartoon and Talking Simpsons.
It has been quite an eventful month of November, I gotta say.
It feels to me like December's already over because we're working so far ahead. I'm like, wait, it's the end of November? I thought we were done with December now.
We're almost done with December. Yes. We've been living in Christmas town for a while.
We really have been, yeah, getting lots of great stuff ready for you guys. Lots of fun December podcasts.
Oh, man, so many cool guests are coming.
Oh,
we
yeah.
We really have a lot of great stuff coming for you guys. Oh, boy.
Yes, I'm so excited about all of our stuff for December. And yes, that schedule will be online soon. You can check it out, what's happening for What a Cartoon. But all the Simpsons guests will be a surprise for you, so you'll never know what's coming. But big guys and gals. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about some news. So our Sketchfest show was formally announced.
That is true. Yeah, last episode we hinted at it, or we told you folks about it, but it is now officially announced and the tickets are available. It is on Wednesday, January 16th at 8 p.m. at the Gateway Theater in downtown San Francisco. Tickets are $15.
Yes, and you can go to sfsketchfest.com and you click on schedule and tickets to find out how to get those tickets. But I think we'll just put a Patreon post about it. We'll remind you, we never stop bugging you about live shows when we have them. We don't want you to miss them. So yeah, I'm really excited about this. It's a big theater. It's probably going to be our biggest show yet
in terms of space-wise.
Yes,
sure.
So Bill Oakley will be our biggest show until we get another Oakley style guest, but who knows who our guest will be.
Yes, we are working on that now.
Yes,
but we have fun surprises in store. It'll definitely be worth your time. Also, apologies, I have a little bit of a cold today, if you can't tell.
I wanted to mention that, but Henry's soldiering through this. Thank you, Henry, for soldiering through these recordings.
That's fine. I'm powered by my excitement for Sketchfest. I have said this a million times before, but I really do mean it, that Sketchfest is my favorite comedy festival I've ever been to. It's one of my favorite things about living in the Bay Area. And us getting to be a part of it for 2 years in a row now is such an honor. I am so excited. Like, we didn't even have to apply for it. We got a direct offer from the folks running Sketchfest to say, like, hey, you want to come back again this year and at a bigger place?
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm really glad they like us. And, you know, I would never compare myself to the comedians I love or the improv people I love or the podcasters I love, but it's so cool to be in the same program as them, you know, just to have your name in the same program. It's like, oh, I've got a show too. That's so cool.
I can run into Paul F. Tompkins on the street and be like, hey, we're both doing shows here. Hi.
Our names are in the back in a smaller print. But yes, please check it out again, sfsketchfest.com, and that's January 16th at 8 at the Gateway Theater in San Francisco. We hope to see you there. Hey, why don't you come out and just visit the Bay Area for a bit?
It's a fun place.
Yeah, especially for Sketchfest. So there's some new Simpsons news that Henry got for us, because I just wasn't sure what happened the past couple of weeks, or perhaps the past month, has been a blur to me because so much has been happening. I was gone in Vancouver for almost 2 weeks. I got mugged. I'm not sure what happened before or after that, but I'm here now.
Boy, it's hard to remember what happened before that.
Yeah.
Thanksgiving and also
Halloween.
My family, they had my mom's house was threatened by the big fires that were up in Northern California. Their house was one of the few that stood, which was very lucky. I was so happy about that, but that was scary. That was a scary start to November. It's just, November was a tough month.
And I usually like November. Why did it hurt me so much? But yeah, things are getting better. And there is some new Simpsons news, I guess, in that Henry found out Billy Eichner was on a recent episode.
Yeah, he announced he had been cast in it to play bossy fourth grader who is bossing around Lisa as a newspaper editor. I think they've done like 17 newspaper episodes of the show by this point.
There have been a lot of episodes, but I do like seeing comedians that I know on the show. It feels like if you're on The Simpsons, even at this late in the stage of the game, you've made it in some way.
Yeah.
Like, if only we could be on The Simpsons.
To be able to say I've been on The Simpsons is a real honor. And I hope someday when they cast podcasters on that show that get to at least say like, oh no.
if they make an episode about podcasting, we better at least be drawn into it.
And also in Simpsons news, football announcer Robert Smith sang the Mr. Plow song during the Apple Cup, which was a very snowed-in football game.
Coleman, moments ago, Robert sang the song.
Called Mr. Plow, that's my name. That name again is Mr. Plow.
That's really cute. I don't know what the Apple Cup is. I assume they're fighting for apples.
It was just very snowed in, which
yeah.
A snowed in football game in November really maybe shows you that the weather is falling in on itself and that the climate is dead. But hey, it was a fun moment on TV.
It was a cute moment to distract us from climate change. But another piece of news is that so an Austin bar called Nickel City briefly became a Moe's Bar pop-up shop. And actually, a friend of mine, a hometown friend from Youngstown, Sarah Spanik, who might be listening, she went to there because she lives in Austin. So she got lots of pictures from there, and I should show you them at some point. But it looked pretty cool. It actually looked better than the Universal Studios Moe's because it was like a real bar with real dank, and you can get beer in mugs, and they had a bunch of food items on the menu, all Simpsons themed. It was really neat. So that, I think that actually ended at the beginning of November, but we haven't recorded a talk to the audience since the end of October. But it looked pretty cool.
Yeah, it did look pretty cool, and yeah, you miss the dank yes. In Universal. There's
too sunny, too many children.
There was something I found out about the Universal Studios that I didn't know when we were last there was the reason they have Cletus's Chicken Shack is to keep the Doc Brown's fried chicken recipe in the same place it used to be. So it's definitely the most out of left field food item there because all the other stuff is based on the show. But that one is they just needed something that sold fried chicken so they could keep the Doc Brown recipe.
And they reskinned it. Okay, I didn't know there was a Doc Brown fried chicken restaurant. I don't associate him with fried chicken in any way.
No, I don't think I ate the one time I went to Back to the Future Lane. I don't think my family ate there. I think we ate it. Probably just had the cafeteria-style pizza that they sold at Nickelodeon Studios, I would bet.
You know, I'm only having this thought now, and I can't believe I didn't have it earlier, but why wasn't there an Uncle Moe's Family Feed Bag?
No, I think there's not as much respect for Season 7 and 8 there.
I guess.
Ham Ahoy was on shelves.
Yeah, that is true. Sorry, I got so excited about the idea of being in an Uncle Moe's Family Feed Bag that I had to interrupt you. But yeah, I guess they would get sued by Chili's or something or TGI Fridays.
A little too close, yeah. I suppose.
So that's it for news. I can't think of anything that's new that's happening for us. Of course, the What a Cartoon Movie podcast launched in November. That was a good thing that happened in November.
Oh, yeah.
And we
talked
about...
Thanks so much to all the new supporters who went up to the $10 level. Thanks so much. I hope you guys are enjoying that podcast. And we'll look forward to next month's, which the polls will be open soon to vote on which film you want us to do.
That was so much fun to do, and I'm glad people upped their support and even joined at the $10 level to do it. So yeah, that was one of the good things that happened in November. And we don't know yet because there's a few days left, but this could be our highest month on Patreon by the end of the month or very close to it.
I think so. I think it will actually be the highest month in ever. So thanks so much again. Like, this helps me and Bob do this full time and not have to work for the man. I love it.
Yes. So let's get into the Talking Simpsons comments. First episode is My Sister, My Sitter. That was our episode with Cat Bailey. And Alex Mitchell says, just a small pedantic point. When you criticize Cat for going to the Hard Rock Cafe rather than a British restaurant, the Hard Rock in London is in fact the first and original restaurant opened in the chain. So in a way, she did. I do, of course, back up the sentiment that they don't serve British cuisine. So Cat was right.
Okay. But I guess the original Hard Rock is more interesting than just any old Hard Rock, I suppose.
And also, do you want British cuisine?
Yeah, I don't think so.
I just boil a bunch of crab. No one wants that.
Andrew Bouvier says, wow, $5 for a beer at a dive bar? Please tell me that's at least like a mid-range type of beer like Sam Adams or Sierra Nevada. Or are Bud Lights and PBRs for $5 really considered cheap in our neck of the woods in San Francisco?
So I can answer this. I'm the beer expert at this table.
Yes.
But things are pretty pricey here, and it's not common for a pint to be $7 or $8 for just a good craft beer, not like a super fancy craft beer. And I think like a PBR or a Michelob Bud Light, you know, your average trash beer tier of beer, which I've had from time to time, they're usually like $3.50 or something like that. And I know that's a lot of money because I came up in a town with dollar beers.
Oh, man.
Yeah, like dollar drafts. And the beer was disgusting, but it got you to where you needed to go.
I'm just used to, I'll get the seasonal cider at most places. That's about $8, I think, usually.
But I really like being in Vancouver because it has a reputation for being expensive, but it was so cheap.
Oh, wow, really?
Yes.
It's funny to go from here to expensive. expensive place. I think me and you, when we went on that business trip to Manhattan, we had the same thing of like, I mean, I guess this is expensive, but I paid more for this stuff in San Francisco.
We pay amusement park prices for everything here. So the next episode is Homer versus the 18th Amendment. And D-Fight says, one of the most shocking things about living in Japan is the popularity of non-alcoholic beer. The culture of drinks after work is so strong that beer companies are cashing in by marketing their products to drinkers who wish to quote-unquote rest their livers by having booze-free booze once in a while. Mm. Not a joke. In Japanese, the term is kyukanbi. There are even alcohol-free cocktails in a can, at which point I have to ask, why not just buy juice if you want a fruity-tasting drink without the liquor in it? And I guess the answer to that would be just a social stigma. Like, hey, you're not drinking beer? Look at that guy drinking juice over there.
Yeah, I guess you're still technically drinking beer instead of directly ordering, like, say, a cranberry juice or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure it is, like, very much a gendered thing. Like, you're a man, you got to drink with us after work.
That's the whole point of it. Yeah, I was in the... that was recently in that show Agretzko, the really cool anime on Netflix about getting drunk with your group. That's just how it is. It's how you reconnect with your other employees and you shout out at your boss like, hey, fuck you. And then the next day you don't talk about it at work, really, though everybody remembers it.
Yes.
Nicholas Berry says, I feel so conflicted by this episode. I love it, and it includes some lines I use most during my life. It's rare for me to go out the door and not shout, if not back, avenge death to my husband. However, as a British person, I think the fish and chip shop joke is in such poor taste that I feel a bit angry every time I watch it. Leaving the politics aside, the IRA bombing campaign on the British mainland was highly destructive and killed a large number of civilians. The year before this episode was broadcast, the IRA detonated a 1,400-kilogram bomb in East London, which killed three people and caused £170 million worth of damage.
Yes, and we got a few comments about this from people saying they were offended by it. I totally get it. I mean, the joke is the people are cheering something they shouldn't be cheering at all, like a horrible act of terrorism. But I can understand if you lived through that, it wouldn't be so funny to you. So yeah, I totally get it. It's interesting to hear that perspective from a non-American.
I think that joke was written by Americans who don't really understand. Like, you just, especially in the 90s, the way the news would get filtered down to here in a pre-internet age, you're just like, something about the IRA bombing stuff.
When I went to London not too long ago, well, I guess it was long ago at this point, for a game thing, I didn't realize that they didn't have trash cans anywhere. I was like, well, where are the trash cans? I need to throw this trash away. It wasn't like, I mean, it was even worse than Japan, where there's like only trash cans by vending machines for the most part. And someone had to tell me, they had explained like the IRA bombings and trash can bombings and things like that. So it's like, we just got rid of trash cans.
Ooh,
so people can't blow them up anymore or anything around them. So yeah. So yeah, hopefully you weren't offended by our laughter at that joke.
No. I guess I laughed at it. Apologies if it was offensive. I guess I laughed at it just to the idea of like, it's pretty nuts to make a joke like that. That would be like, I don't know, in 2003, making jokes about the World Trade Center blowing up, which The Simpsons definitely wouldn't do.
It was sort of just a tension-relieving laugh, I think, just like, oh, geez.
Yeah.
So this is for Grade School Confidential, and I have to apologize to Henry ahead of time because I tried to find a comment.
Everyone agrees with
you.
I tried
to find a comment that agreed with you, but I couldn't. So instead,
I failed in this debate. You win, sir. I doff my cap to you.
I am a master debater. I chose one of the comments that agree with me. Of course, I chose Nina's because she's a friend of the show. So Nina Matsumoto says, 100% agree that Skinner is a virgin because the way the entire revelation scene is written and directed makes no sense otherwise. I've never thought to interpret it any other way. Also, since Edna has shown to have a big libido, for her to be a virgin who's not ready for sex makes the relationship that much sweeter. And that is the one thing
that's
I think Nina pointed out that I didn't think about and none of the commenters really thought about. And that's in the show, that it's a very sweet thing that Edna is willing to wait.
That Edna, who usually has quite a sexual appetite, and that's written into this very episode too, that she understands that, you know, Skinner isn't ready for that yet. And she just holds his hand and is very cute about it too.
Yeah.
And for her, it's kind of almost like going back to high school sweethearts or whatever with this more emotionally stunted man than she is.
Yeah, it makes the episode so much sweeter just if you think about it in that context. And it's one of my favorites. I'm so glad we did it twice. Mm-hmm. Once for Everything's Coming Up Simpsons and once for us. But yes, the important thing is, though, I was right, Henry.
Yes. Now that I reflect back on what Bill Oakley told us as well, it definitely was The intention is he definitely was a virgin, and it just was an ad lib muddied the waters some, but he's still a virgin. I have been convinced.
Folks. And I hope the listeners are impressed that we did our extra homework and we put a special segment in the episode.
I hope they appreciated that, yes. And on that same episode, Mike Mariano says, I can't believe we got a Simpsons scene in a movie theater without a goofy film parody. Or a joke title on the marquee. The Gene Reese era is truly long behind us. You get great detective work noting that The Big Chill is the only likely real-life movie that fits Skinner and Chalmers' discussion. Though the music in the scene is more 90s thriller than Big Chill's Motown. Tom Berenger forever!
Yeah, I don't think Alf Clausen got the memo about what they were supposed to be doing.
Yeah, no, it just sounds more like an adult thriller type thing. I wouldn't be surprised if they just got that one out of the library.
Oh yeah, for sure. So up next, we have What a Cartoon comments, and the first episode for What a Cartoon is the Robotech episode, Farewell, Big Brother, and Zachary Adams, former President Zachary Adams, says, thanks for covering this. When I was 8 in 1985, Robotech and Star Blazers was a bit much for me, a slow-moving show that got really confusing if you missed a day, but which had a huge impact on me. When I saw the Busted Sentinels pilot by chance as an afternoon movie, I was hooked and started buying the novels. When Sci-Fi Channel, as it was then known, started re-airing it in 1992, I was ready. It ended up being my gateway into anime, into military sci-fi. It ended up being my preferred piece of escapism during some really dark bits of my life. And when they released the Perfect Collection VHS with both Robotech and Macross versions, I spent an obscene amount of money on it and I got it on Anime Ego's first crowdfunding effort to release the uncut sub DVDs. All this time later, Macross is still my favorite anime franchise ever, even if Delta wasn't that good. And I guess Delta was the newest one from not too long ago.
I have to admit, I haven't watched, other than original Macross and Macross Plus and Macross 2, I haven't really watched much other Macross. But Macross Plus is great. If you like Cowboy Bebop, it's kind of a pilot for Cowboy Bebop.
It really is. And I mean, as much as the original Macross is great, I think if you only watch Macross Plus, it's just the most ideal version of that experience you can get. Or the movie too.
Yeah, Do You Remember Love? Yeah, they speed it up if you're not ready for 36 episode long
of early 80s. Yeah, of early 80s pacing too.
Also about Robotech, Philip says, as for Macross itself and the adaptation of the first part of Robotech, yes, on the surface, it's a close adaptation, but the most important aspect, the entire theme and point of the story of Macross, gets twisted. Macross is very much an anti-war show. The central theme of the show is Hikaru being pulled in two directions. The falling out that took place between Hikaru's family, a family of air circus performers, and Roy Fokker was over his decision to join the military and fight in the unification wars. When Hikaru gets trapped on the Macross when its base folds to Pluto, he resists joining the army. Despite his inexperience as a pilot, he doesn't want to fight. The entire theme of the show is Hikaru being pulled further and further into military life, but after the war, humanity had just come out of fighting. People don't want to fight more and are just trying to defend themselves against Zentradi. The love triangle and ultimate choice at the end is all about Hikaru resisting the military's pull by his infatuation with Minmei and fighting his feelings for Misa, whose family comes from a military background. In Robotech, they get the epic final battle with the Zentradi entirely wrong. You play the song at the end of the podcast. In Robotech, it is the rah-rah, we will win, kill them all. While in the TV show and the movie, the song Minmei sing is about love and peace, not using violence when at all possible. And that is true. That is a major change from the show, that they changed proto-culture into Robotech, the MacGuffin proto-culture. And Minmei's pop song she sings in Do You Remember Love is about love and happiness and togetherness, peace, which confuses Zentradi and makes them weak to an attack. In Robotech, when she sings that song, it's just a song like, come on, guys, let's fight together. Woo! Yeah.
So. Well, I mean, if this was localized in Reagan's America, where we just forgot that war sucked, it was like, yeah. Hey, let's do war again. That's pretty cool.
We were 10 years separate from Vietnam, so we had all these cool new toys, and Top Gun just came out. It's time to go to war and kill them Ruskies.
And Reagan talked about Star Wars, which was, I guess, a series of lasers that were never built. It was all very fun.
It would have been great if he did it, man. It's RoboCop. Had its joke about Star Wars was that it just constantly it
falls
accidentally
downstairs.
Oh, no, that was the N209. Mm. In Robotech, the Star Wars program just blew up other countries countries accidentally like, well, shot another missile thinking it was a bomb and it blew up Puerto Rico.
I forgot there were Star Wars jokes in that. And I hate that it's called Star Wars, by the way. So the next episode is the Bob's Burgers episode, An Indecent Thanksgiving Proposal. And Ian Berman says, there is no absinthe that actually causes you to hallucinate, unfortunately.
Aw.
I'm bummed by that. It was just old temperance propaganda that may have been linked with the delirium tremens. It's very high in alcohol, so it was very linked to alcoholism when it was readily available and popular in France and Switzerland. You can very easily get the real stuff in the U.S., and you should drink it because it tastes great and is the best liquor in the world. Just hard to disagree, Ian, but I appreciate that you offered your opinion.
I would like to try it, but boy, I am glad to have the myth dispelled for me that, like, we didn't get the real absinthe when, no, it's all the same, but I'm sad that Moulin Rouge lied to me, that the Green Fairy makes you hallucinate.
They lied to us through song.
I hate that.
Yeah, it tastes like licorice, and I'm not down with that, so that's basically my explanation.
Oh, it tastes like licorice? Blah. Yeah. Licorice is the grossest thing in the world.
We've moved on since licorice. Now that real candy exists, we should just outlaw it. It just tastes like tires and medicine.
Also about Bob's Burgers, Andrew Giacchetti says, just wanted to add to Hank's comment about Big Bob. He actually does show up again in a Christmas episode, Father of the Bob, where the Belchers go to Big Bob's Diner for its annual Christmas Eve party. You get to see a lot of the backstory between Bob and his dad and see how Bob started up the restaurant. Plus, it gives the great line, he's slow, he only paints about a letter a day, but he can spell like a son of a bitch.
I can hear John Benjamin saying that too.
Bob's Burgers, doing that Bob's Burgers episode has made me rewatch a lot of Bob's Burgers.
I really want to.
I kind of dropped off in season 7, so it's just been like, hey, me and my husband, it's dinner time, let's just watch a Bob's Burgers. And actually, I didn't realize that in season 8, and then in the most recent episode this year in season 9, they introduced a character named Alex who looks just like me.
I saw you tweet about that. That's crazy.
It's really weird. Yeah. Because, I mean, it has, my hair isn't as full right now as it used to be, but it definitely was my older haircut. Same glasses, same, like, raglan t-shirt as well.
That should be your new avatar. I know your one now is very good, drawn by Maddie.
Yeah, see, I wouldn't want to give up that one, but it's, yeah, it was really weird. The character is voiced by Thomas Middleditch, though, who doesn't look like me.
He's really great.
I would like to think that I would be Eugene's best friend as well.
Okay, everybody, write fanfic right now about Henry and Eugene. I want to say one thing. Steven Hillenburg, unfortunately, this week, when the What a Cartoon about SpongeBob went live, shortly after that, he passed away, and that sucks. And I feel a little bad on the podcast. I'm like, where's your next thing, Steven? While he's probably very close to death.
Yeah, it was unfortunate. When you see press releases about a famous person struggling with an illness, you always hope that, you know, they're going to overcome it. But when you don't hear stuff about them for a while, you want to hope for the best, but you kind of assume the worst. And though even I was shocked by this, like, boy, he just announced his ALS diagnosis like last year. And it just came this fast. And yeah, he actually passed away on Monday, the day we posted it to the free feed, though we didn't find out until Tuesday.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't really like jokes about this. I know we have a curse, you know?
we say that about The Simpsons, not What a Cartoon.
But I mean, when it's someone like Barbara Bush or Gordie Howe, I guess you could joke because they're like 90 years old, but Stephen Hillenburg was not even 60, you know? So it was very sad. And
it doesn't feel as funny. No.
Yeah. So yeah, go back and watch Rocco's Modern Life, especially the season 4 episodes that he showran, and go back and watch SpongeBob because his stuff is so great. It's sad that he only worked on 2 different cartoons in his life, which, and they're amazing cartoons, but it's like, oh boy, I wonder what could have been, you know?
It was so touching yesterday to see all the tweets on social media about how much he touched the lives of kids and how memorable his cartoons were, revisiting them for What a Cartoon or rewatching some classics like Chocolate with Nuts is one of my favorite cartoons ever. It's so funny. It had all these hilarious jokes. Same with the fine dining one and the playing the halftime show at the football game one.
Yeah, I was seeing so many great GIFs and clips yesterday, so it was really good to see so many people come out. 2 days ago, rather, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Time's been going by so fast, but I also felt bad because, you know, a lot of bad stuff's happened to me. I'm healthy and everything, and a lot of bad things have been happening to me, but all these good things are happening now. And I was like, I posted a hopeful message about the future. I was like, you know what? I'm very excited about the future. I'm excited about all these opportunities and things that are happening in my life. And then I clicked tweet, and then the first reply is look up Steven Hillenburg on Twitter.
Oh,
like,
God.
I was like, oh boy, now I feel bad about feeling good.
You shouldn't, Bob.
I know.
You do, but yeah, I know what you mean.
It was a bad time for that tweet. But I think you were saying, I mean, in good news that's somewhat related, you said that there's good news associated with the Rocko's Modern Life movie.
Oh yeah, because we were talking about it yesterday. I'm like, where is that movie? What's happening? And well, the last updates was in October that we had missed that. Joe Murray said, when asked on Twitter, why has this been delayed? When are we ever going to get the movie? Static Kling, that's the name of it. And Joe Murray responded that it was being delayed for a good reason and that you'll all be pleasantly surprised why it's being delayed. And my hope is that they just commissioned more episodes of Rocko, and instead of just being a one-off movie, they're going to do like 26 new episodes of it or something.
They are bringing back Rugrats, so, you know, stranger things have happened. So up next, yeah, again, this is SpongeBob SquarePants episode, and Thad wanted to lecture us, and I totally appreciate this because I don't know anything about this. And he says, I'm just catching up now, but holy shit, you guys are wrong about SpongeBob fandom. It isn't Ren and Stimpy level with an ex-director orchestrating a lot of it, but it's definitely toxic with fans setting lines in the sand at certain seasons, blaming specific artists, and calling for their removal, etc. Definitely Simpsons-esque style internet fandom, at least. And I guess that the Simpsons and Ren and Stimpy stuff, it's just a little more apparent to outsiders.
Yeah.
This, as an outsider to SpongeBob for the most part, it was never coming through the surface to me. I guess if you go deep enough into any fandom, there's going to be toxic elements, but I didn't know it had, you know, Simpsons-style toxicity to it.
I will warn you, if you watch one video on YouTube about the history of SpongeBob, you will then get 17 recommendations of how Executive X ruined Nickelodeon, how Executive Y ruined Cartoon Network. Like,
fire Mr. Lawrence.
It's shocking how many of those are created to fill the content minds, not even by the regular folks who you would think are angry about this, but by just online media companies that see, oh, kids are searching for this, then they need an explainer video about who ruined Nickelodeon.
Oh boy, I'm glad I'm out of the content factory.
Also about SpongeBob, Charles Morgan says, I'm around the age of Bob and Henry, and I had been largely ignoring Nickelodeon at the time SpongeBob came around. I moved on to more sophisticated fare like Space Ghost, as the likes of Cat Dog and whatever Klasky Chupo was making didn't appeal to me. So I was a little surprised in late August when I came across a newspaper article detailing the phenomenon. On the surface, it appeared to be more like the same lazy, lame kids programming that had been Nick's brand for years. I thought, how can this possibly be popular? When I did finally see my first episode, Neptune Spatula, it was a revelation, a play on the Arthurian legend, except where SpongeBob pulls the titular spatula from a bucket of grease, Neptune appears before the gathered crowd to crown him the new fry cook. The bit where he refuses to accept that it could possibly be SpongeBob who extracted the utensil literally had me in tears. Yes, that was very good.
That's great. Yeah, we'll do more SpongeBob in the future, I think.
I kind of want to do chocolate with nuts. That's the one I want the most.
So up next, we have the Aqua Teen Hunger Force episode, Mayhem of the Moonanites. And Joe Hodgson says, I was one of the unlucky affected by the silly bomb scare in Boston all those years ago. And bombs in quotes. As a recent college grad, I was working in the city at some crappy job, and I was kind of freaking out a bit that I was going to be horribly late. I was on the train when they found the device, so they shut it down and we just sat there. In a pre-iPhone world, this meant no one really knew what was going on. I had to call my boss from the train to tell him I'd be late and get the update from him as he looked online. I actually have no idea how long I was on that train since it was so long ago, but at least I had a gaming device on me. I never blamed the guys who put those circuit boards up for the delay. I mostly blamed the overzealous Boston PD or transit cops who couldn't recognize that it wasn't an explosive. Though in their defense, they were placed in weird spots with low foot traffic along supports for bridges. The whole thing was rather silly. And I say, cops should take a basic pop culture training course.
When you hear people talk about online harassment and trying to report it to the cops, you find out how little the people in charge of the law are aware of anything.
Yeah.
Because they're old and don't care. And that's similar with this Aqua Teen thing. That bomb scare was also funny because it was them, again, Adult Swim just trying to do fun underground marketing. Everybody's doing it. This is just wild and weird, just like the show itself. But then when the rubber hit the road of that marketing, it looked too much like it could just be a terrorist.
The real world wasn't ready for the Aqua Teen weirdness.
Well, and, you know, these small town. Well, Boston's not a small town, but local PD was being trained and given all this money. Like, you're going to stop the next 9/11. You are. You got to watch out for terrorism, terrorism. So they're all looking for their chance to be the hero and prevent it, you know?
Totally.
So David McBurney says, on the brief 12-ounce mouse tangent, that show could only have happened from the coupling influence of an Adult Swim show and the rise of shows like Lost, a surreal, nihilistic Aqua Teen knockoff that slowly morphs into an equally surreal, completely impenetrable, serialized show, still with a primary intent of terrifying stoners at 3 a.m., but now armed with the knowledge that a bizarre continuity can make it more confusing, not less. Ironically, The Dedicated could resolve some theory about why things were happening, but it's like getting into the backstory of Fooly Cooly. There's an internal moon logic, but it isn't the point.
I like that comparison because, Fooly Cooly is way better than 12-ounce mouse for a lot of reasons, but
yes,
both of them are about setting a tone and an emotion, not necessarily telling you a story. Mm-hmm. You know, just like, oh, we want to make you feel this way with these images, and it usually works really well. So I like that comparison.
He makes a good point that 12-ounce mouse found a new way to be opaque to viewers and confuse them more by actually explaining things more than Aqua Teen does, but doing it in a way that only confuses instead of illuminates.
And you're getting more of it in 2020, so that's one thing to look forward to.
Yay. You know, we didn't even talk about the new Harvey Birdman special. I did watch it. It was really funny.
I need to watch it. Yeah, boy. A lot of things have been happening so fast.
When you watch that Harvey, what's fun about the Harvey Birdman one, it is the writers catching up with everything that has happened since the last show came out. So they talk about iPhones. They talk about Amazon drones. They talk about Obama and Trump. It's everything. It's crazy.
You're right. That show ended before Obama and like as iPhones were released.
Yes. When you see all the jokes they make in it about things they couldn't make jokes about before, and also Peter Potamus is Alex Jones in it.
Oh.
It's really good.
That is great. That's so great. But yeah, thanks again, everybody, for donating. This has been an amazing month with some ups and downs, but mostly ups, and this is a great month in terms of what we're taking on Patreon and in terms of what we're putting out in terms of content. And I'm so excited about the Sketchfest show and our new movie podcast next month, and a lot of big, cool guests on Talking Simpsons and What a Cartoon. A lot is happening. And again, stay tuned for that What a Cartoon schedule, which will be happening very soon, and you'll see some really cool stuff we're doing in December.
And your chance to vote on what our next What a Cartoon movie will be. What will be the second episode after Batman the Animated Series? Find out and make your voice heard in our poll.
So thanks again for listening, folks, and we'll see you next month for another episode of Talk to the Audience.
Infotainment.